It's Friday, and it's the weekly news roundup. Welcome. We're glad you're part of the full story on WSHU and online at WSHU.org. I'm Ron Ropiak. In just a bit, we're going to be talking about some of the news from Connecticut, including the latest on the proposed tolls, casinos, the increase in the minimum wage, school regionalization, and a lot more. But we're going to start with New York today. So let's bring in WSHU's Karen DeWitt, who covers Albany and the state government. Hi, Karen. How are you?
Hi, Ron. I'm doing well.
It's just a week or so until the budget is due. Are they going to make it?
Yeah, well, New York State, unlike most other maybe sane states like Connecticut, has an April 1 budget deadline, which is pretty early considering you don't get the tax revenues until mid-April. But that's the big question. Is the budget going to be late or not? It always goes down to the wire, especially when we had a divided government of Republicans and Democrats. And now even with all Democrats, they're still not ready to, you know, make deals. There's a lot of posturing going on, and they seem to be waiting, if not for the last week, which is next week, then the last minute, which would be next Sunday evening. So, yeah, it's the usual kind of a hurry up and wait nail biter that we're used to here.
It sounds like you're anticipating working through next weekend.
Well, yes, I guess I don't really have a choice on that, given that April 1st is Monday, and the lawmakers, they went home for a four-day weekend, and they've been told to come back Monday and pack enough clothes so that they can stay at least through the following Monday. So everybody's prepared for that.
Well, for your sake, I hope it's not an April Fool's Day. What does Governor Cuomo want? What are his battle lines?
Well, the governor, you know, because the legislature is all Democratic, they've been working pretty well together. But Governor Cuomo, as people may know, really likes to be in control of things. And so he's trying to reassert his authority with the budget. He's drawn some lines in the sand. He says he's not going to agree to a budget unless the temporary property tax cap is made permanent, unless there's some criminal justice reforms in the budget, including an end to cash bail. And he wants at least a commitment to public campaign financing. He says, you don't have to work out all the details, but I want you to commit to a plan in New York State. And he also wants to hold spending down because the tax revenues have come in lower than expected and people are worried about a recession. And of course, the legislature wants to spend more money on schools at the very least and higher education. So there are some dividing lines that are there right now.
It sounds very, very familiar to what's going on in Connecticut. But Karen, I'm a little confused. What happens if the deadline isn't met?
Well, that's really interesting. Once the budget is late, the governor in New York State holds a lot of power. He or she, whoever's governor, can present spending extenders to the legislature, and they can load them up with any policy items that they like. And the lawmakers have two choices. They can accept it, or they can reject it. If they reject it, the government shuts down, and Cuomo has threatened that he'll blame the legislature if there's a government shutdown. And the lawmakers are pretty cognizant of that. They know that their powers are greatly diminished after April 1st because of this law in New York State. Also, there's another caveat. The lawmakers just finally got pay raises after 20 years of no pay raises. But the rule with the new pay raises, according to the commission that put the pay raises out, is that if the budget goes beyond April 1st, they have to give their pay raises back. Now, that is in dispute in the courts right now, and lawmakers say, of course, we're not affected by, you know, pay raises. We're doing this work because it's the right thing to do. But I think that that's also a factor pushing them to maybe just settling their differences next weekend.
That is quite the incentive.
Yes, it is. And like I said, they don't want to admit it publicly because they don't want to look like that's the only reason they're here. But it is. It's quite an incentive.
So if I understand it correctly, in some strange way, maybe being delayed may actually help the governor get what he wants?
Yes, it would get him what he wants. Although, if there were a government shutdown, I'm not so sure that the public would blame the legislature because they don't really know the individual lawmakers, but everybody knows who Governor Cuomo is. So I think that there's a risk in that. It could backfire, and Cuomo could end up being blamed for the shutdown.
Coming up in a few moments, we're going to be joined by Michael Gormley from Newsday, and he's going to be talking to us about Long Island and marijuana and what's going on in Albany. But give us a little bit, a few seconds of where the effort to legalize marijuana is right now in Albany. I read some reports this week, and to be quite frank, I'm a bit confused about it.
Yeah, there's so many unanswered questions still. Who would grow it? Who would distribute it? Who would sell it? Would it be structured like the state's liquor system? Would you be able to grow it at home? The taxes, what rate will they be set at? Will there be a reparations fund for communities that were adversely affected by the decades-long marijuana prohibition? None of those questions are answered, which I think it's making it less likely that it's going to be part of the budget, and they're going to have to decide on it in the coming final weeks of the session, which lasts till June, so they do have plenty of time.
So it could still go forward, but it may not happen until, does the session end June 1st?
Yeah, it just seems like there's too many open questions with that. Meanwhile, there's a backlash growing from the PTA, the school boards, the county sheriffs, and the chiefs of police. So the opposition is kind of growing to it, which might make it a little more difficult to get done.
We're going to stretch it out a bit with Michael in just a few seconds, and we're going to find out a little bit more about that. Finally, Karen, there's a lot going on in Connecticut with casinos, gambling, sports betting. Ebang Udama is here. He's going to be helping us with that, and also Ken Dixon. But I read an article the other day in the New York Times, and what it said may change plans around this region when it comes to casinos and gambling. Because some New York lawmakers are now talking about putting full-fledged casinos in New York City or right by the city.
And it's not just lawmakers, it's the casino companies. They've been up here every day this week lobbying for this. Under the original law, upstate was supposed to get the casinos first. There's already four new upstate casinos, and there weren't supposed to be any in the New York City area until 2023. They're talking about speeding up that timetable. It could bring in as much as $1.5 billion in initial revenue to the state and maybe $1 billion more each year. That's very tempting to lawmakers right now who are facing a $2.6 billion budget shortfall. And as we mentioned, uncertainties about what's going to happen with tax revenues later in April. So I think there is a chance that this could happen.
Are they talking about putting a casino, a full-fledged casino, right smack in Manhattan?
Probably not Manhattan. It would probably be one of the other boroughs. Also, possibly Aqueduct Raceway in Racino is already there, just building a casino onto that complex.
And, of course, in Connecticut, they've been talking about putting a casino in Bridgeport for years. So I'm going to get the perspective from Ken and from Ebang to see how that will be affected. What does Governor Cuomo think about this idea?
Well, he has said that he hasn't talked to anybody from the casino companies, though he admits that he has former aides who are lobbying for these casino companies. In fact, the former governor of New York, David Paterson, is a proponent. He's a consultant to the Sands Casinos company. But this is one of those issues where the governor, the legislative leaders, they're not going to talk about it, but it could end up mysteriously in the budget in the middle of the night, March 31st. It's not something they actually want to take credit for doing, but it may end up in the budget nevertheless.
WSHU's Karen DeWitt in Albany. Karen, as always, thank you.
You're welcome.
It's the full story, and we continue talking about what is going on in New York State, specifically about legalizing marijuana. And for that, we're going to bring in Michael Gormley, who covers Albany for Newsday. Hi, Michael. Thanks for being with us.
My pleasure to be here. Karen's a tough act to follow, but I'll do my best.
How is it looking there right now? As I mentioned, it seems a bit confusing from a number of the reports that I'm trying to figure out. Do you think that legalization will still take place this session?
You know, I always feel like I'm explaining like a foreign or another planet when we're talking about Albany. Right now, marijuana, by all accounts, is out of the budget talks. Doesn't mean it can't come back in, but right now it's out. More importantly, the governor removed the funding, which wasn't going to be much for this coming fiscal year. But he removed the funding and replaced it by another funding stream. Now, that leads to questions, really, because we've got dwindling tax revenues in New York. We've got a deficit to fill of over $3 billion in that budget before they spend any more money. So anything that has money attached to it is going to be looked at. That's when you guys were talking about the potential for New York City casinos. Mm. That's the only reason that that's got any glimmer of hope right now, is that they're getting fairly desperate for money. But right now, the governor has said that his proposal for legalizing marijuana is out for the budget, and probably would definitely be taken up after the budget between now and June 19th, which is the scheduled end of the legislative session.
And I believe the governor was talking about replacing that revenue stream with a tax on some expensive properties in New York City, right?
Yes, mostly for properties valued at over $5 million, so apartments over $5 million. And a lot of these are owned by people from other countries who come in for business or pleasure into New York. So it's some people call it the perfect tax, because you're taxing people who never have to vote for you.
The perfect tax. I wonder if there is such a thing. Michael, I'm going to ask you to hold on for just 1 minute, because I need to get your perspective of how Long Island plays into this and the opt-out movement and what some legislators think about that. We are doing the weekly news roundup, as we do on every Friday. If you would like to join the conversation, you could email us, tfs@wshu.org, or you can find us on Twitter. We are at Full Story WSHU, and of course, the voicemail is always open for you. The number is 833-CALL-TFS. That comes out to 833-225-5837. Michael Gormley is with us. He covers Albany for Newsday. We're going to speak with him for a few more moments, and then we're going to bring in Ken Dixon and Abong Udama, and we'll get the Connecticut perspective. It's the Full Story on WSHU. We'll take a short break. We'll be right back. This is the Full Story on WSHU, and on Fridays, it's our weekly news roundup, and we're going to continue our conversation right now with Michael Gormley, who covers Albany for Newsday, and we're talking about the efforts to legalize marijuana in New York State. Michael, what role does Long Island play in this right now?
It's actually an interesting and very important role. Nassau and Suffolk counties, which is what all of Long Island is, have chosen to opt out of any legalized marijuana law. Now, that doesn't mean that people on Long Island couldn't smoke marijuana legally if this bill is approved. What it means is there wouldn't be any of the manufacturing or any of the sales shops on Long Island. Now, that's a concern, because it cuts into what the statewide tax revenue would be. Governor Cuomo said that it makes things more difficult to have Long Island, and actually several other counties are considering this too, to have them opt out. But more importantly, there's a political equation here. Again, Albany is different than a lot of places. The $175 billion state budget is actually a very secretive process. A lot of legislators like this, and a lot of governors have liked this over the years, because you can put controversial issues in there, like legalizing marijuana, and you end up doing a vote on a whole bunch of things that includes legalizing marijuana. So you can always say later on, well, I was voting on the whole package, these other issues. If it's moved out of the budget, which at this point it would be moved out of the budget, it would get a single vote. Legislators would have to vote on legalizing marijuana. It's not altogether certain that, despite this being a very popular issue with the people in New York, according to the polls, that it would pass. And that's because there's been this groundswell that you and Karen mentioned of opposition since, I think it was about December, when county health directors came out against it. There's been opposition by the New York Medical Society, which is the physicians. There's opposition by the state PTA. But more importantly, perhaps on Long Island, there's opposition by law enforcement. Mm. And law enforcement has quite a bit of political sway in Long Island. You'd actually be facing a situation where some of these new Democratic senators on Long Island, who might not be favoring legalization of marijuana, would be put in the spot of having to vote for it. Popular issue, or and by doing so, crossing a very potent political force on Long Island in law enforcement.
So if I'm understanding it correctly, if it becomes a la carte, then it's going to have a much more difficult time.
That's the thought. That is the thought. The easiest time would be in the budget, but and that's why there's always going to be a chance that it's going to come back in again as it has some money attached to it. But if this goes outside the budget, which is the way it is right now, right? Governor says it's out. You're looking for two things. One, it'll be much more public process with hearings. It would probably be better bill because public exposure tends to do that, but it also would be a tougher vote.
How much money are we talking about if it doesn't go forward? And I'm trying to compare it to some numbers that I saw from a friend of ours, Dan Haar, who writes for the Hearst, Connecticut newspapers. And he did a column the other week, and it was just basically about Connecticut residents who are going over to Massachusetts nowadays and what they're buying there from the marijuana dispensaries, but also when they go there, if they're gambling, if they're buying food and so on, how much is Connecticut actually losing? How much would New York State be losing if it doesn't get legalized?
Well, it's hard to say how much it would lose because the margin isn't quite as big as people would think. The argument for a long time on legalizing weed was that, you know, you're missing out on all these, you know, billions of dollars in tax revenue. Well, it's not quite that because the tax on legal marijuana can't be that much more over what the street level cost would be. Otherwise, you're not going to cut into street sales. So this coming year, the state wasn't even counting on a great amount of tax revenue from this. The idea of lost, that really hasn't been calculated how much would be lost if New York is an island on this. But that was one of the arguments that Governor Cuomo has been making, is that if we're surrounded by legalized marijuana, then we're putting New York State at a disadvantage.
Michael Gormley, he covers Albany for Newsday. Michael, we appreciate your time. Please come back with us in the future.
Anytime.
Thank you, Michael. You're listening to The Full Story on WSHU. We're going to turn our attention now to Connecticut. And with me in the studio is Eban Gudama, WSHU's chief political reporter, and Ken Dixon, reporter and columnist for Hearst, Connecticut newspapers. Gentlemen, always a pleasure to see you.
Thanks for having us.
Eban, it's starting to get real in Hartford. Let's start with tolls. Anything new to report on?
Well, tolls have made it out of committee. And three different bills made it out of committee this week. And basically, the head of the Transportation Committee said it's just a beginning. So we don't know what we'll end up with. He says hopefully one of these bills is going to make it all the way through and get signed into law by Governor Lamont. And also, talking about tolls, there was a decision in the Rhode Island case this week. Rhode Island had a trucks-only toll, and the trucking companies had taken them to court over that, and the case was thrown out. So what does that mean for Connecticut? Because initially, during the campaign, Lamont had said he was for a truck-only toll, and then he changed his mind after he became governor and presented his budget. So we'll see how that plays out as we go forward.
I'm sorry, and then for a while he said, let's see what the decision is in Rhode Island.
Well, that was a jurisdictional thing, and the federal court is sending it back to a state court, so that's still up in the air over interstate commerce, yeah.
As to whether or not the tolls on trucks will still be allowed in Rhode Island.
Right. So that's going to linger longer.
Okay. But that won't make any difference, you think, to what happens in Connecticut now, what Governor Lamont is proposing?
Lamont was like giving lip service to the truck thing. It was never even in his bill, though. So the fig leaf is kind of gone. And I spent 5 quality hours with the Transportation Committee the other day. It's super interesting, but they're approving these broad brush bills. I mean, it's a moving target. Yep.
Well, they just wanted to get it out of committee.
Right. Because the deadline was 2 days or something.
I know we don't have tons of time, but if you could just run down for me what the toll picture is looking like now. What are they proposing?
I like the amendment. It's going to have them set up along Lake Avenue in Greenwich to get all those hedge funders finally, because they don't want to do the millionaire's tax.
We'll talk with David. We'll talk about David Layman in just a bit.
Well, basically, there's you know, one of the points that the Republicans who are totally against tolls kept coming up with is that we don't have a fixed plan here. We don't know how many gantries are going to be set up. We don't know how much per mile is going to be charged, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Mm-hmm. So there's a lot of detail that's still got to be worked out. But no matter what, I don't see tolls. Even the proponents are saying that it won't come into place before 2023.
Okay, 2023, and the number that they're still proposing is around 53 or so in terms of gantries?
Yeah, a low 50s number, right? You know, and 91, 95, 84, the parkways.
Okay. So all the major ones. Okay, and the Transportation Committee gets to talk about this more, or does it go to another committee?
No, it goes to the House and the Senate, and basically before they call it up, there's still going to be some negotiations that will go. So we don't know. amendments will be brought up, et cetera, and we don't know what we'll end up with, finally.
Lake Avenue, Greenwich.
Lake Avenue, Greenwich. Tolls from the beginning all the way from down the post road straight up to the Merritt.
Right.
We were talking with Karen DeWitt about casinos in New York, possibly around the New York City area, how it affects upstate. I know, Ebong, that there was a big ruling the other day affecting Connecticut.
Yes,
what is that
yesterday,
about?
As a matter of fact. Basically, the feds have approved a casino outside the reservation for the Connecticut Indian tribes, the federally recognized Indian tribes. And it had been held up for quite a while because the then Ryan Zinke, who was the head of the Department of Interior, had been holding it back, and he's since left, and he's under investigation right now. So anyway, it was approved yesterday. Just before that, earlier on in the week, the legislature had moved out of committee a bill that would have allowed the casinos to go ahead without federal approval. Mm. And that's now dead because they have the federal approval. But I'm not too sure how soon we'll see a casino in East Windsor, because MGM says they're going to take every legal action to try and prevent that, because they say it should be thrown open to everyone if they're going to have a casino outside of Indian reservations.
So, Ken, why East Windsor?
That was going to stop the Connecticut money from flowing up to MGM in Springfield. They were talking about 16 to 18 months if they got into the ground tomorrow for that place. And everybody on public safety was kind of trying to be nice to each other the other day. And by the same amounts, they approved the open process that would give Bridgeport a chance, although I think that's looking almost as moot as the other bill.
Well, you know, it's interesting the role that Bridgeport plays in all these negotiations. It's like in the 90s, there was a similar situation, and they even had a referendum in Bridgeport to show that the Bridgeport people were all for a casino in Bridgeport. It never happened then. It was used as some type of leverage. And again, we're seeing the same thing play out this time around.
I have heard talk about casinos in Bridgeport since the 80s, and I don't even know if it happened before that.
I've got a 1994 front page from the old Telegram taped the wall next to my desk, yeah.
Saying casinos coming to Bridgeport?
The headline said no dice. It was the Senate vote at the time.
So I don't know, but they're going to try and use this and as leverage to prevent another Indian casino.
That is the story. I think that's not going to go away for a while. You're listening to The Full Story on WSHU. Ebong Udama is with us right now. Ken Dixon also. It's the weekly World News Roundup here. And to coin a phrase for a newspaper, regionalization, the third rail. Where does that stand right now? School regionalization.
Well, Governor Lamont's initial push was to have regionalization of schools, of the school districts, in order to save money. And like many of these things. We've been down this road several times before. And there's a fierce independence in the school districts in Connecticut. And it was an uphill task to start off with. And I guess Lamont had to decide that he was going to throw in the towel on that and fight on other issues because this is a very... home rule in Connecticut is like sacrosanct.
Mm-hmm.
And we have always said every legislative session, it starts with people saying, look, we've got to have a more efficient system. We've got to save money. We've got to have some type of regionalization so that we can do this. And it never happens.
Reality is starting to close in on the governor now that he sees what he's dealing with. He's backing off on that. Tolls, maybe they'll get tolls. There's so many ornaments on that marijuana Christmas tree that I think it could easily topple over.
No kidding. I'm surprised to hear that from you because I remember us talking a few months ago and you thought that you were pretty confident that it would happen.
It's a sitting duck, and today was the public hearing. It was like the first 2 hours was one witness. In front of the Judiciary Committee, the General Law Committee was listening to hearings on a total of five bills being heard today, and it's easy to kill bills that are this complicated. And June 5th.
Well, and you know, there's a criminal justice component to it as well. And basically, the legislators from the urban areas are really pushing that there has to be some criminal justice reform attached to any marijuana bill. And also that, the thing about it is that there is support from Lamont. As a matter of fact, last Friday at the St. Patrick's Day parade in Bridgeport, there was someone holding up a legalized marijuana flag and got a thumbs up from Lamont when he marched past. That was interesting. But we'll see how things work out.
The details of that are even more complicated by the fact that people who've had controlled substance arrests, it's lumped in as a single statute, and it could be cocaine and marijuana. So the way this is being set up is you're going to have to have an affidavit or a copy of a police report and take it to a judge and have it, if this bill passes, and have a judge
because it was basically a substance abuse charge. It wasn't specific that it was marijuana
possession.
So,
yeah.
So that's a problem there.
With the minute or 2 minutes that we have left, and Keith Faniff is going to join us after the break, with the short time that we have left before we have to take our break, the school regionalization, I know there's a new proposal from a representative in Essex. Is that gaining any traction that you know of? I know it was much more moderate in tone from what I read compared to what was reported about the ones from Senator Looney and Senator Duff.
Well, I don't know. I don't know about that. I haven't followed it that closely. The thing about a lot of these things, they start off with a lot of fanfare and fizzle out as the session proceeds. So I have no clue as to what we're going to end up with, but it certainly is not going to be a huge regionalization bill.
I should mention that Monday's program, we're going to do a full hour on the latest proposal, and then also we're going to have some, to be honest, I'm not too sure right now who's going to come on, who's going to talk about the latest proposal from the Lamont administration, because I know they've scaled it back a lot. It's no longer so much the stick, it's more suggestions, ways to get school districts to work together.
We've had suggestions before.
And you've watched this for quite a number of years, and you're saying those suggestions
right after Chef versus O'Neill. In fact, even before Chef versus O'Neill was finally decided, the legislature said we have to do something about this. We have to get people to voluntarily get together, and the state was broken up into regions, and they were supposed to come up with a voluntary. voluntary regionalization and.
Yeah, the magnet schools in Hartford haven't really attracted the suburban people that they wanted to, integrate the schools with.
So a lot of the same old, same old. Ken Dixon is with us, Ebong Udama. And coming up after the break, we're going to be joined by Keith Fanoff from ctmirror.org. And we'll be bringing up a few of another topics that Keith has been reporting on this past week. It's our weekly news roundup. And we hope you're enjoying the show. If you would like to join us, you could email us at tfs@wshu.org. I'm Ron Ropiak. One last break. We'll be right back. This is The Full Story on WSHU. I want to take just a moment to tell you about Monday's program. Because it is about school regionalization. And there are new proposals. The Lamont administration has modified its proposals. We're going to hear about the new ones. We're going to get the reaction from some of the folks from Wilton who were leading the charge against us the last time. It'll be an interesting program, and we hope that you can join us on Monday at 1 o'clock and then, of course, play back at 7 o'clock. We are talking about news from Connecticut. Keith Fanoff writes about a variety of topics for ctmirror.org, connecticutmirror.org. It's nice to have him back on the air with us. Hi, Keith. How are you?
Good, Ron. How are you?
I'm fine, thank you. You wrote a number.
I should warn you, before we get started, Ron.
Yes.
I caught this mutant cold virus this week, and I've gotten my wife sick, half the General Assembly, and I'm pretty sure a third of your listeners already have a cold, so I apologize for the coughing in advance.
Oh, it's thank you for letting us know. I think it's made its way around the radio station also.
People don't have to turn off their radios. They may just want to wear a mask while listening to me, but that should be enough to protect you. But I'm sorry. Go ahead.
Keith, I got to tell you, chicken soup. Chicken soup. That's it. Stay in bed. Watch Netflix chicken soup. Or at least listen to WSHU, of course.
Exactly.
You wrote about the unemployment rate the other day. The numbers coming out for it for February. You see any big changes?
One of the concerns that economist Don Kleppersmith, who's been raising, Don Kleppersmith is with DataCorp Partners, but he was also the state's chief economic advisor under Governor Wells' administration, is pointing out that the average annual job growth since the last recession, just about every single year, especially since we recently revised the numbers for 2018 and downgraded the anticipated, the perceived gains quite a bit. The point is the rate of growth is shrinking every year. It's still growing, but it's growing by a smaller and smaller and smaller amount. If you can picture, I know this is radio, but if you can picture a staircase just descending downward, usually that's one of the signs that I'm not ready to use the recession word yet, but it's one of the signs that we're really headed for an economic slowdown. It's not conclusive, but I think it's just one more reason everybody is going to be watching very closely in April, mid-April, when the state, after the income tax filing deadline, and the state starts to assess where its income tax receipts are going. If, and I stress the word if, they do start to soften like they did in New York State back in December, then you could start seeing people get a little more twitchy.
Oh, the dreaded R word, that recession word. And I should mention that the other week we were talking about some economists who were talking to legislators in Albany, and they also dropped the R word, and they said not this year, but in 2020, watch out and plan accordingly.
And that sounds so far off, but the fact of the matter is, and I apologize for the background noise here at the Capitol, but the fact is, 2020, that's the state budget that the legislature and Governor Lamont are trying to craft right now. That's the plan that they're putting in place. So it may sound farther off than it is.
Keith, I also want to mention in the studio is Ebong and Ken Dixon. We were just talking about the
Never heard of them.
We were just talking about the legislators, and you wrote an article about how much money they make and whether or not they should get a pay hike. Are they going to get a pay hike anytime soon?
No, and I should mention, too, that Mr. Dixon also wrote that they are not going to be getting a pay hike. In fairness, I think had the bipartisan commission that meets every 2 years to look at it, had they recommended a raise, which they last did in 2015, I still don't think the legislature would have voted for it. Right now, with the state's fiscal crisis, there's just not the mood, the climate of it. Nobody feels politically safe, and nobody in large numbers feels politically safe calling for a raise to the legislature.
Ken, how much do the legislators make?
Well, there's only a handful that make the minimum $28,000. If you have some honorary title like Deputy Assistant Minority Whip, they give you a few extra grand. House members make $4,500 in so-called unvouchered expenses. Senators make $5,500 in unvouchered expenses. And I think it's like 54 cents a mile that they get for driving on legislative business.
When was the last time that they got a raise?
2015?
2001 was the last time the House and Senate got raises.
2001?
Yeah, yeah.
The last time the commission recommended a raise was 2001.
2015. That's why I thought about 2015, yeah.
It doesn't seem like a lot of money. I mean, I know if you're a taxpayer and you're saying, well...
Well, it's supposed to be a part-time legislature.
Right.
You're supposed to have a full-time job and then go for a few months a year to Hartford, although because of the budget crisis we've had in the past few years, it's been like a
full-time
round.
Job.
Yeah.
A full-time job there. Okay. Keith, the state obviously needs money. The recycling program is hurting, and it looks like the Lamont administration is nipping around package stores, trying to get them to take a silver bullet for the state. Can you tell us about what's going on there?
Well, the governor had proposed in his budget a wide array of what some people call sin taxes. There was a tax on e-cigarettes or vaping products. There's a tax on sugary beverages. In the vein of that, he also proposed a 25-cent deposit on liquor bottles and a nickel deposit on what some people call nips, the little 50-milliliter bottles. The Package Store Association actually took a page from the Connecticut Business and Industry Association's playbook back in 2011 when Governor Beloy first took office, and he told them, listen, I'm going to have to tax you. I'm going to have to do something. And he said to the CBIA, do you want to tell me how you'd like to best be taxed, or you want me to just pick it? And faced with that choice, the CBIA came up with some proposals. Governor Lamont put out his own recommendations, like I said, but the Package Store Association said, hey, are you open to counter proposals? And he said, sure. And so they gave him one. And they said, instead of a quarter deposit, what if you just charge a 10-cent, we'll call it a user fee, on the traditional liquor bottle? What's the difference? Well, the user fee just goes to the state, and the bottles don't have to go back to the package store, so they don't have to deal with that mess, and you would just turn them into your household recycling stream. There'd also be a 10-cent fee on the nips, the small bottles. This, again, is the package store's counter proposal. You would bring the nips back, and you would get a nickel of that dime back. The other nickel would just go to the state. And it's still, we won't know for sure what's accepted until probably May when they start crafting a final budget proposal. But so far, nobody in either the administration or in the legislature has had that ideas off the table. If anything, I think it increases the likelihood there'll absolutely be something on liquor bottles once you've got the industry on board.
I wonder how many people will make the trip for the nip.
Well, I got people in my neighborhood are, you know, on their bikes all day going up and down hills with filling those plastic bags. That could be my retirement, too. That's what I'm semi-planning on, Ron.
Which is not that far off, Ken,
oh,
right?
Thank you very much. I'm just a phone call away.
Hey, Bong, does this have the wheels? Is this going to go forward?
Well, you know, the interesting part of it is that the liquor stores won't have to take back all those bottles. And I think as long as they don't have to deal with the mess, I think they'll go along with it. And lawmakers will find a way to get another nickel a bottle in. So
yeah, and the taxpayers are going to pay for it because there's no market for recyclables, and all the stuff is ending up in landfills now anyway. Since okay, let's do an hour on recycling, Ron. Yeah.
Just did that the other week. We recycled show, so we're probably going to do a third one coming up pretty soon too. It's a problem that's getting much, much worse. David Layman. Governor Lamont would like him to be running the state in terms of economic development. He's a former banker with Goldman Sachs. The nomination is where right now, Yvonne?
I called, when was it, yesterday? On Wednesday to find out, and I was told it's not been scheduled yet. But I have a feeling. Next week, yeah. I had a feeling it would be next week.
It goes before a committee now?
No. It goes before the Senate next week, I think. So basically, it's been delayed because a number of Democrats are concerned about the fact that Lehman has a Wall Street background and worked in a department that was involved in the subprime mortgage business. So he says he had nothing to do with any of that. In his hearings, lawmakers were skeptical and said that they'd do their due diligence and check on a U.S. Senate report that was done about the financial crisis, the 2008 financial crisis. And based on that, they determined whether or not to approve him.
Keith, will he get the approval?
I would be surprised if he does not. I think the bigger challenge is sort of the larger image for the Lamont administration. And I'm not just trying to conveniently steer this back to the budget, but you've got, of course, I mean, we're talking about somebody who everybody knows is a Greenwich millionaire to begin with. And now you've got a budget that comes out that places a heavy emphasis on regressive taxes, sin taxes, broadening the sales tax. In other words, tax hikes that don't care how much money you make. They're going to charge a millionaire as much as they're going to charge a poor person. You pay the same sales tax on a coat that you purchase at the store. It hasn't gotten a lot of press, but Governor Lamont, a big part of his fix, a big part of his plan to close the next deficit, is to effectively refinance our pension costs and inflate them. That's what happens when you refinance them. When you push costs down the road, you dramatically expand them and shift them onto the kindergarten classes all over Connecticut. I mean, we're talking about moving tens of billions of dollars of costs onto a generation of taxpayers starting around 2033. The overall perception is being seen and you're getting pushback, particularly from the House Democratic Progressive Caucus, is that it is a budget that is too accommodating to the wealthy and the elite and imposes significant burdens on the middle class and to a certain extent on the disadvantaged. Now, I'm not saying that the Economic Development Commissioner cements that type of an argument. I'm simply saying it's part of a bigger picture. I don't see him getting turned down on that, but I see that as all being woven into a bigger image problem and a bigger debate that he's having within his own party.
Yeah, the progressives are going to have to come out and see how many actually there are if they want to work some will here in the legislature.
So the progressives, even though Lamont says he's against it, the progressives are still saying that they want a higher income tax on the wealthy in Connecticut. And any chance of that moving forward? He has said no. That is Governor Lamont.
Well, I mean, he got to his bottom line when he gave the budget out. Now it's up to the legislature, and it's going to be some kind of battle of wills. And I don't see, and Keith, correct me if you think I'm wrong, I don't see enough progressives up there to move the needle to surcharge on millionaires.
No, I think Ken's right on that. My gut tells me where they split the difference quickly is he won't have. Probably they won't have enough votes and they won't want to confront him over the income tax if he really pushes back and draws a line in the sand. But neither are they going to give him all the sales tax and sin taxes that he wants. He'll get some of them. The compromise is he's going to have to give up some of the emergency reserve, what people commonly call the rainy day fund. He wants to keep about $2 billion in the bank as a safeguard against the next recession. He's not going to get to probably do that and give the rich a free pass on the income tax. And he's going to have to choose one or the other. And it'll probably be he'll give up some of the rainy day fund, which means we'll be less prepared for the next recession.
Abong?
Well, we do have a situation, though, that we keep talking about a surplus that's going into the rainy day fund this year. And maybe he might say, well, you know, we have so much going into the rainy day fund, we can use some of it. But there's a real big pushback on his so-called diet budget. He says he's going to basically cut back on a lot of stuff. There are a lot of programs that are going to be affected, and there's pushback, especially with housing and other programs that for some programs for health, the elderly. There's a Medicare program that will be affected.
Savings program.
Yeah, Medicare savings program. So there's going to be a lot of pushback on all of that.
With the 2 minutes that we have left, Keith, can we talk a little bit about raising the minimum wage and the paid family and medical leave? How are those proposals looking?
I think it's a fairly safe bet, as safe as you can bet in the Connecticut General Assembly, that they're both going to pass, and not necessarily in the exact form they've been put forward. Minimum wage will probably go forward in a graduated way. Paid family and medical leave, I don't think will be 100% wage replacement. It'll be certainly a smaller percentage than that. The real challenge is going to be, is it done in a more comprehensive way? We've already seen data that says a $15 an hour minimum wage could push some very low-income households off the Husky program. And now all of a sudden, you're making a little bit more money and you don't have health insurance. If we don't start planning for things like that in the social service safety net, you will see the debate get complicated very quickly. So I would expect to see minimum wage and paid family medical leave pass, and I'd see them spark other debates in the sessions to come.
I know the Republicans have been complaining that the insurance industry is not too happy with paid family and medical leave, that it means the state is now taking over their business because it's basically creating a whole state bureaucracy to deal with insuring this program. So we'll see if the fact that insurance has such sway in the insurance business has such sway in Hartford might slow things down as far as paid family and medical leave.
Ken, you get the last 45 seconds today. The pressure's on.
I know. No. Give me a question.
Minimum wage, paid family leave.
I think Keith and Abong nailed it. I don't have anything to add.
You think it's pretty much going to pass, and we should move on. Nothing to see here.
Well, you know, if you want to get into the grant the weeds with it, you could go to the State Office of State Ethics and start looking up lawmakers. You know what kind of stock they have. In the past, Democrats have defeated the minimum wage, and you look at their holdings, and you see, they own fast food restaurant chain stock. Well, okay, I guess that explains why they turned it down.
Ken Dixon, Hearst Connecticut Newspapers, WSHU's Abong Udama, Keith Faniff, who's just about to run off and have a big bowl of chicken soup from ctmirror.org. Keith, Abong, Ken, thank you as always.
Thanks, Ron.
Thank you.
Keith, I hope you feel better.
Feel better.
Thanks.
Michael Gormley from Newsday was with us a little bit earlier, and Karen DeWitt, WSHU's Albany reporter. That's it for our show today. Joelle Schrock is our engineer. Carrie Frank, digital editor. Associate producers Christian Carter, Sabrina Garone, Natalie Chafari, J.D. Allen is the producer. Ann Lopez is the senior producer. Terry Sheridan, our news director. I'm Ron Ropiak. Thanks to all of you for being part of The Full Story.